Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
The U.S. Grains Council is an association of corn, sorghum, barley farmers, as well as our agribusiness members that touch the grain export value chain, as well as our ethanol plants here in the U.S.
U.S. Grains Council's Director of Industry Relations is Ellen Zimmerman, explaining who USGC is.
We are a USDA cooperator, which means we receive federal funding through the Farm Bill to accomplish our work. And our work is to promote the export of grains and ethanol. As I like to say, move that grain. We don't care how, we don't care where. We have full-time presence in 29 countries, programs in 60, working on behalf of our membership.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Good morning, everyone. Bonjour tout le monde. Welcome to Kananaskis and the 2025 G7 Leaders Summit. I'm pleased all leaders are here, honored by your presence in my home province, Alberta, in the heart of the Canadian Rockies.
Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney welcoming members of the G7 to Canada.
I'd note that we're also meeting on Treaty 7 territory. These are the traditional lands of the Blackfoot Confederacy, the Stoney Nakoda Nations, and the Tsuut'ina First Nations. And we're gathering at one of those turning points in history. I think we all recognize that turning point where the world looks to this table for leadership. 50 years ago, in France, a group of leading industrial nations got together in the face of global economic and financial crisis, the end of the international monetary system is known, stagflation threatening, challenges in the Middle East, geopolitical challenges in the Middle East, and it was the frank and formal discussions around that table in Rambouillet that led to a long period of decisions and prosperity at that time. Alors, nous avons la chance.
We are fortunate enough to have here President Macron as the oldest member representing that state.
Seven gathered to integrate those countries that had been behind the Iron Curtain of communism and to accelerate the flow of capital and trade to the developing world. 23 years ago, the G7 met here in Kananaskis. We were just talking about it. And that was when the world was still reeling from the aftershocks of 9/11, another turning point in history. And amongst the many decisions taken were control of the spread of weapons of mass destruction, a subject that we'll be coming back to. So as I said, we're meeting at one of those hinge moments, those turning points in history. The world's more divided and dangerous. Hostile states and terrorists have expanded their capabilities and their reach, threatening global security in our local communities. Global commerce, energy systems, even intelligence are all being rewired.
As G7 member states, we have the opportunity to shape tomorrow's world, a world that is more safe, more prosperous, more fair, and more free. However, the G7 must adapt in order to fulfill its mission.
A strategy. We have to change with the times and to build a better world. And some of you, such as you, Mr. President, have anticipated these massive changes and are taking bold measures to address them. All of us around this table are reinforcing our militaries and security services for the new world. But we all know that there can be no security without economic prosperity, and no prosperity without resilience. And in a world where shocks flow across the borders, that resilience comes from cooperation. Cooperation around that starts around this table. Cooperation that can lead to a new era of prosperity. Energy security and critical minerals, artificial intelligence, quantum, combating human smuggling and transnational repression. So we will have open, frank discussions over the course of the next 2 days. We might not agree on absolutely every issue, but where we will cooperate, we will make an enormous difference for our citizens and for the world, and bring the next era of prosperity, I hope, to the benefit of those we serve.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Doing right by our family farmers requires working across the aisle. That's been a trademark of this committee over time, and that's how successful farm bills usually function.
Minnesota Representative Angie Craig is ranking member of the House Ag Committee.
Traditionally, USDA has reflected that commitment as well. By supporting our family farmers as they grow food that feeds our country and the world, ensuring our food is safe to eat, stopping the spread of animal disease, and innovating the future of food and agriculture. However, I am genuinely concerned that under this administration, agriculture policymaking has become more partisan and polarized. This reckless push to cut nearly $300 billion in funding to a title of the Farm Bill, instead of prioritizing getting a 12-title, 5-year Farm Bill across the finish line, is of particular concern to this committee. And it has put the bipartisan Farm Bill in jeopardy. In addition, DOGE has been given essentially a free pass to damage program integrity and undermine the USDA's ability to carry out its core functions and provide key services that America's farmers rely on. Madam Secretary, your agency has fired and then had to rehire agency employees because of uninformed and reckless decisions over the course of the past few months. Our trade deficit is increasing. Retaliatory tariffs are coming. Countries are already moving to buy commodities from other nations instead of America's farmers. Input costs are stubbornly high. The bird flu remains a concern. Food banks have been defunded. Billions of dollars in farm programs remain frozen. School cafeterias have been cut off from sourcing locally grown food. Food safety and animal health experts have been fired or forced out. Nutrition assistance programs are being decimated. The Farm Bill is in jeopardy. The USDA Inspector General, who rooted out fraud, waste, and abuse, was fired. And the MAHA Commission, which USDA signed off on, is issuing reports with made-up science and fake citations without talking to family farmers. I grew up in farm country. My grandfather was a farm foreman, and I now have the opportunity and honor of representing corn, soybean, pork, and turkey producers, among others, in Minnesota's 2nd District. They're tough people. They want markets, not farm income, from more government handouts because their government's policies are hurting their farms. So, yes, Madam Secretary, we are grateful that you've come to testify in front of us today, and we have a lot to talk to you about. Thank you for being here.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says, just look at history.
As we saw in President Trump's first term, substantial non-inflationary growth was created. Non-inflationary growth. Real wages rose, and working Americans did better. Hourly workers did better than supervisory workers. We believe that this will happen again. As you outlined, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, tax breaks for seniors on Social Security, and the ability to deduct auto loans on new cars made in America, as was available when I bought my first car in 1978, will be restored. All of this will help working Americans overcome this horrendous affordability crisis that this administration inherited.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So we have been around since 1960. Our sorghum farmers and our corn farmers were certainly the group that brought the core of our membership together.
Ellen Zimmerman is Director of Industry Relations with the U.S. Grains Council.
Our history has a really interesting start to it. 65 years ago, we are celebrating our 65th anniversary. A group of Iowa farmers in particular got together to talk about the depleted hog herd from Japan. They had a natural disaster that washed out most of their hog population. And we, you know the saying, when pigs fly, the U.S. Grains Council starting program was actually putting pigs on an airplane from Iowa. The hog airlift, as we call it, took those Iowa genetics to Japan and repopulated the hog herd, which then repopulated the feed demand in Japan and one of our partners and loyal customers today.
And they have an upcoming board meeting.
Yeah, so this is our annual Board of Delegates, our 65th annual Board of Delegates, and it's taking place in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're really excited to bring our membership together, accomplish our association business, but also take a look back and, like you said, take a look to the future as well. It's a really exciting time in trade and in exports, and so we'll, of course, be talking about markets and programs. We have a lot of our past chairs from our history joining us in Grand Rapids to help celebrate the 65 years of really rich history and good work done over the years. And then we'll, like I said, be looking to the future of what's next, what's coming down the pipeline in this hopefully next 65 years of the U.S. Grains Council.
But when it comes to policy, she says they get their marching orders from members.
Yeah, so we work with our members to get those marching orders. We have committees or advisory teams, as we call them, seven different ones that meet at each of our conferences and then in between conferences as well. And they really work to set the tone, the priorities, the priority markets, our programs. All of that starts with our membership. And so this Board of Delegates meeting is an important part of that priority setting as we look to the next couple of months and the next year.
And explains the private-public funding through the Farm Bill.
So MAP, Market Access Program, and FMD, Foreign Market Development, as well as RAP, which is a different kind of source of money, which is the Regional Agricultural Promotion Program. All of these are dollars that come through USDA. Like I said, some from the Farm Bill, others have other sources of dollars. And how it works is we take our membership dollars, or our first dollars, as we like to call it, and we use those as part of our application to USDA to show stakeholder support. So our member dollars, or the matching funds for our federal dollars, come first. We have to make sure we meet the matches for our federal dollars. And then we get those federal dollars. So member dollars are typically used for our headquarters, our member services, our member meetings, that sort of thing. But they're leveraged to be able to amplify and double those dollars with federal contributions. And then the federal dollars are used to really fund our international programs. So we do about 12,000 programs a year, about 1,000 a month is what we're looking at around the world in those 60 different countries. And we focus on trade policy, trade servicing, and demand building in those markets around the world. And what program type we use or what it kind of looks like depends on, of course, the market, and then also our commodities and the customers we're working with as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The most recent forecast from Brazil's national supply company puts the 2024-25 corn harvest, including the first, second, and third crops, at around 5 billion bushels, up 11% from last season.
University of Illinois ag economist Joanna Calusi.
Some private consultancies are even more optimistic, putting total production between 5.2 and 5.5 billion bushels. If confirmed, this would be Brazil's second largest corn crop on record, just behind 2022-23 season, when the country reached 5 billion bushels for the first time. The expected strong harvest is mainly due to higher yield potential, as planted area increased only 1.7% from last year, from 52 to 53 million acres. Average yields are projected to hit a record 95 bushels per acre this season, about 8% higher than last year. This yield boost is largely driven by second crop corn called safrinha, which saw favorable rainfall in April and May. Harvest of the second crop, responsible for almost 80% of Brazil's total corn production, began in early June and should continue until early August. Over the past 20 years, Brazil's second corn crop has grown ninefold, from around 400 million bushels to 4 billion bushels. Safrinha is planted right after the summer soybean harvest. Meanwhile, the first crop planted during the summer season has declined by 22%. The higher profitability of soybeans in the summer has led many farmers in southern Brazil to reduce the area planted with corn over the past two decades. Despite a larger harvest this year, Brazil's corn exports in 2025 are projected to decline compared to last year. From January to December, exports are forecast at 1.4 billion bushels, a 9% drop from the same period in 2024. This decline is mainly driven by rising domestic demand from the livestock sector and the rapid growth of Brazil's corn ethanol industry, which has expanded quickly over the past decade. About 3.5 billion bushels of corn from the 2024-25 crop season is expected to be consumed domestically in Brazil, a 6% increase from the previous season. Of that total, the animal protein sector is projected to account for about 70% of usage, while the ethanol industry will use around 15%. Brazil, the world's second largest ethanol producer after the United States, has seen strong growth in corn-based ethanol plants across the Central West region, where second crop corn production has expanded quickly over the past decade. Currently, the country has 25 operational corn ethanol plants, with another 15 under construction. While Brazil is expected to reduce its corn exports in 2025, the USDA projects U.S. corn exports at 2.6 billion bushels, just behind the record of 2.7 billion bushels exports in 2020-21, when China was a major buyer. For U.S. exporters who have already exceeded expectations in the first 5 months of the year, Brazil's slower export pace is likely to keep opening windows of opportunity during the year, especially when U.S. corn remains price competitive.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, you know, it's interesting times in agriculture. As we know, farmers, right now are finishing up planting corn, certainly sorghum's going in the ground or has already been planted.
Representing the 1st District of Kansas, a member of the House Ag Committee, Tracy Mann.
Wheat all over the state. Some of it looks good, some of it not so good. We have Mosaic that's really going to impact parts of the crop. We know that where production costs are means that farmers are, having tough times right now, given where commodity prices are. At the same time, cattle prices have never been better. And so the livestock industry continues to do well. But, a lot of concerns about our corn, wheat, and milo and soybean producers in the Big First.
House Ag Committee has yet to pass a farm bill during this session, but he does say aspects are included in the big, beautiful bill.
Yeah, well, a lot of things. In many ways, a lot of provisions from a farm bill were able to get included in the big, beautiful bill. Strengthening crop insurance, very important. We're able to do that. Raising reference prices, very important. We're able to do that. Also, the tax provisions in this bill matter a lot for agriculture, making sure that our ag producers don't see income tax hikes, but also in this bill, raise the estate tax deduction exclusion. Basically, is very good for our ag producers, to reduce estate taxes. So a lot to like in this bill for agriculture.
And when it comes to addressing challenges.
Oh, very, very much so. It is top of mind, almost constant. And that's just where input costs are and how they've increased the last several years and where prices are. It just doesn't work. And so, making sure that at the very least we have the risk management tools in place for ag producers, crop insurance, absolutely essential, but also raising reference prices and make sure that our farm policy helps to reflect the actual conditions on the family farm today. Incredibly important, able to do that in the big, beautiful bill, but we need to see that get through the Senate, back over to the House, and eventually get signed into law here as soon as possible.
That farm bill that the committee passed last session never made it across the finish line.
So a lot of the provisions that I really liked in the farm bill that we passed last May out of the House Ag Committee were included in what we did as part of the big, beautiful bill. So, and I tell people all the time, and we all know this, the farm bill is not going to, help do everything to help production agriculture, there's still market risk, of course, but at least it provides some certainty that our ag producers and their lenders need to keep going here in tough times. I've been on the floor of the House 34, 35 times now, urging the rest of Congress to get serious about doing a five-year farm bill. But this bill does provide some certainty. It doesn't replace getting a farm bill done, but it's a massive step in the right direction, and I'm proud to support it.
He admits the nation's debt, not just a hot issue, it is a boiling pot.
Well, definitely on the front burner. There's a rescission package that we're looking at today, which would reduce spending. You know, I'm very concerned about our debt, Tony. We are $36 trillion in debt. And it's not just that we're $36 trillion in debt today. It's that 2010, 15 years ago, we were at $13 trillion. So we've added $23 trillion to the debt in the last 15 years. That is not sustainable. So we've got to figure out how to get Washington, get our federal spending, at levels that's much more sustainable. In addition to that, you know, we've got to continue to look at opening up markets for ag products overseas as well. Increasing demand for ag products, of course, is going to push up prices, and that's exactly what our farmers need right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's kind of like harvest every day here in Washington, D.C., but there's a lot to do and happy to do it.
Tracy Mann represents the 1st District of Kansas, member of the House Ag Committee.
Get elected to, advocate for agriculture and our Kansas conservative values. And if that means early morning, late nights, I'm happy to do that. Because we have a lot to do to continue to get the country back on track.
And according to the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, Zippy Duvall, it starts with the new farm bill.
As I shared with the Senate Agriculture Committee earlier this year, we need a modernized five-year farm bill. Farmers and ranchers have faced unprecedented volatility since 2018 farm bill was put into place, making it harder for many of our farmers to hold on. The 2022 census showed the loss of over 141,000 farms in 5 years. That's an average of 77 farms per day that we've lost. With rising interest rates, higher energy prices, supply costs that has gone unchecked, farmers will plant the most expensive crop ever planted this year. And many have faced the tough decision of whether or not to even plant that crop. This is why the Farm Bill and Title I safety net is so critical. Despite skyrocketing costs, the 2024 payments to farmers are projected to be the lowest since 1982. Additionally, farm debt is expected to increase in 2025 to more than $560 billion. Our members support streamlining farm loan programs to meet the evolving needs of farmers and ranchers and to make agriculture more accessible to young and beginning farmers. We are proud of Secretary Rollins for establishing a small family farm policy agenda, and it highlights the need to reform loan programs to streamline the delivery and increase the program efficiency. Adding to the uncertainty that farmers and ranchers and many other small businesses are facing is the possibility of the largest tax increase in American history. One provision that is critical to keeping family farms going is to the next generation is the increase of estate tax exemption. If the exemption level reverts backwards, many families will risk losing their farm. Farm Bureau was pleased to see the progress made with the House passage of the reconciliation package, and we urge the Senate to join to ensure America's farmers and ranchers can continue to provide food, fuel, fiber that our country needs. Of course, we cannot paint the full picture on this issue without talking about our employees. Many of those employees are like family to us, and they are aging right alongside of us. That's a problem because most Americans, they aren't interested in working on our farms anymore, and they're not interested in coming back to the farm, despite the big investments that we're making in recruiting people to come back to the farm. Congress needs to recognize that farm workers as an essential to feeding and fueling our country. It's time to modernize our outdated system, and only Congress can meaningfully do that. Our country, a country that cannot feed its people, is not a secure country. In order to meet the growing demand of food, fiber, and renewable fuel at home and abroad, we must ensure the continued strength of our farms and ranches and our communities.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Minor changes in both USDA's domestic and world wheat balance sheets for June. World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jankowski says new information came in about the U.S. winter wheat crop. However,
the changes were small, fairly negligible, so it doesn't really move the needle in terms of our overall U.S. wheat production forecast. But we did raise our export forecast, and with a 25 million bushel increase in exports, that reduces ending stocks.
A 10-cent increase in the season-ending average price was reported from the previous month, now at $5.40 a bushel. Regarding the global wheat production forecast for June,
an increased production forecast in the EU, government data suggesting about a 500,000 ton increase in India's wheat production. Overall, global wheat production, still a new record, just over 808 million metric tons, but this month adjusted higher by just about 100,000 metric tons.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.